text 17. Punishment is in reality the king and the male, that the manager of affairs, that the ruler, and that is called the surety for the four orders' obedience to the law. I think we discussed this yesterday, didn't we? In other words, by punishment, then, punishment is the real, you know, essence in this way of the king. That is the manager of all affairs, the ruler. Because then the four orders, then they will follow what they're supposed to do, because they're worried about what might, if something goes wrong, that they may be punished. 18. Punishment alone governs all created beings. Punishment alone protects them. Punishment watches over them while they sleep. The wise declare punishment to be identical with the law. Because the law and the punishment go together. If there's only law but no punishment, then no one, very few or practically no one will follow the law. But if the punishment is there, then the law is followed. We see that even Sanatana Goswami in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, he mentions these things, Prabhupada in some places, Rupa Goswami, that you do something, you do it for Krishna, and then that's proper. But if you don't do it, then you go to hell. So that kind of like makes everyone think very seriously. We just simply say you do this, it will please Krishna. Very few people may follow the law. But if they know that if you don't follow the law, that there's some problem will come up, then there's more of a tendency to follow. 19. If punishment is properly inflicted after due consideration, it makes all people happy. But inflicted without consideration, it destroys everything. So here, this point is there, is that has to be after due consideration. If it's not done with due consideration, means you find exactly what is the right punishment for the right, for that the person, the situation, the time, place, circumstance, everything. If that's not, then everyone becomes happy, because the law is coming from Krishna. You follow it, then everybody becomes happy. You don't follow it, no one becomes happy. So if it's done without consideration, means there's always going to be, says it destroys everything. Then everybody becomes worried. Then the leader is not considerate. He does not know how to properly, you know, he'll be worried about so many things like that. Not considerating, then maybe it's coming in from anger or some other aspect that is not based on the scriptures. So therefore, then there may be a problem. 20. If the king did not, without tiring, inflict punishment on those worthy to be punished, the stronger would roast the weaker like fish on a spit. Yeah, the crow would eat the sacrificial cake, and the dog would lick the sacrificial offerings. And ownership would not remain with anyone. The lower ones would usurp the place of the higher ones. So that if there's not, if the king is not willing to punish people, means here it says without tiring, means that he knows the purpose of it and he's very satisfied to perform those duties. But it's here, it's with consideration. So that means it's a great responsibility. That one is not just doing something without any, just for no reason or just for one's own position or power, but it is for the benefit of those people that are under him. Like that. So that means with great consideration, untiringly, those that need the punishment are being given the punishment. Yeah. And then if they didn't, then these are the things, is that those who are stronger will take advantage and exploit those who are weaker. Because here, like roasting the weaker like fish on a stick. You know? So it means it'll be very severe. Then those who are unqualified will take all the sacrificial items. They will not be offered to the Lord. They will just take them for themselves. And those who are unqualified, they will take the positions of leaders. 22. The whole world is kept in order by punishment, for a guiltless man is hard to find. Through fear of punishment, the whole world yields the enjoyment which it owes. Means the everybody has facility and they must respect that. It's coming from the Lord, they must respect that. It must go to the Lord. It's only due to punishment that they will do that. Right? That they'll only afro-sacrifice the Lord, they'll pay tax, they'll give in charity, they'll do proper activities. The only reason they'll do that is because of the worry, anxiety of punishment. For someone who hasn't done anything wrong, it's very rare. Not very often you find such a person. The gods, the Danavas, the Gandharvas, the Rakshasas, the bird and snake deities even give the enjoyments due from them only if they are tormented by the fear of punishment. So all these different, means whatever they're supposed to do or give to those who are above them according to their duties, they're only doing it because of fear of punishment. 24. All castes, all varnas would be corrupted by intermixture, all barriers would be broken through, and all men would rage against each other in consequence of mistakes with respect to punishment. So if the punishment is not properly replied, then the whole society falls apart. Everyone will just do whatever they like. You know, it's only basically due to what people will say, what punishment will get, all these things that someone properly follows. The Bhagavatam also says, the wind is blowing, the sun is rising. All these things are happening out of fear of the Lord. Otherwise, they're not happening. 25. But where punishment with a black hue and red eyes stalks about, destroying sinners, there the subjects are not disturbed, provided he who inflicts it discerns well. So, in other words, where, how do you say, punishment is always moving about, that anybody, anywhere, at any time, if they deserve it, is receiving punishment, then everybody is peaceful. The subjects of such a king are always peaceful. Because they know if they've done something wrong, then they'll get some problem. If they've done nothing wrong, they won't get any problem. So it comes very nicely. And that it says, but provided he who inflicts it discerns well. So here again, this is the third time, you know, just in three places where it says that the king must fully consider. In other words, having fully considered the time, place, and offense, then the other one is here. But inflicted after due consideration. And then here, provided he who inflicts it discerns well. So again and again, it's saying that the king must give direction, must give punishment, but it says he must consider things very, very carefully. And that means it's based on the law, it's based on the scriptures, it's based on what he has learned from others and their experience. So it's based on education. Education and realization. Okay. Then, okay, 26, again it's said, they declare that king to be a just inflictor of punishment, who is truthful, who acts after due consideration, who is wise, and who knows the respective value of virtue, pleasure, and wealth. Because, as we discussed before, unless he knows all these things, if he doesn't, he has to know this virtue means what is proper, what is the actual standards. He must know pleasure and wealth, because otherwise these are generally the things that people are having problem with when the law is not being followed. So he also has to know what they are, so he values them. So then he knows what the citizens' difficulties are. He can respect that, and then based on that he knows what is proper punishment to give. Truthful means that it's according to the law, according to the Shastra. Truthful means what is in relationship to the Lord. That is the real truth. If it's not in relation with the Lord, it doesn't have any real... It's not actually truth. It may be moral, it may be virtue, but it's not truthful. Truthful means it has to be in relationship with the Lord. Otherwise, it's not factually true. Right? Just like one time... Yeah. 27. A king who properly inflicts punishment prospers with respect to those three means of happiness. Means he himself will gain virtue, pleasure, and wealth. But he who is voluptuous, partial, and deceitful will be destroyed even though the unjust punishment, through the unjust punishment which he inflicts. If someone is improper in their behavior, and they're full of all kinds of bad qualities, then the unjust punishment that is given, they will be destroyed through that. 28. Punishment possesses a very bright luster, and is hard to be administered by men with unimproved minds. It strikes down the king who swerves from his duty, together with his relatives. Next it will afflict his castles, his territories, the whole world, together with the movable and immovable creation. Likewise the sages and the gods who, on the failure of offerings, ascend to the sky. So because punishment is so glorious, then here we see that it is hard to be administered with people who have not develop proper understanding, proper Krishna consciousness, unimproved minds. If their minds are not trained, if they have not gone through some system of discipline and proper behavior themselves, then they cannot actually properly give it. Unless one has been trained in the law and culture and the philosophy, then it is very difficult to give this punishment. So if it does, then it strikes down the king who swerves from his duty because he's not properly applying it or he's not giving it at all. It means if he doesn't give punishment, he'll lose his position. And if he gives punishment wrongly, he'll lose his position. So we see it's a great responsibility. It's very common that many want to be in charge and they want to take the responsibility, but they have to know what is the responsibility. Means if they don't punish, then they will fall from their position. If they do punish but not properly, they'll also fall from their position. So like that. And then it says here, together with his relatives. Like that. Together with his relatives. Then all his palace, then all his territories, then everything, the whole world, movable, unmovable, the sages will become disturbed, sacrifice doesn't go on, everything will fall apart. This is why what's his name? Sringi's father? Why that particular, the sage, he was telling Sringi that what he has done is very great, a very great disturbance. You know? A very great disturbance. Because by his, how you say? He's killed the emperor, which he doesn't understand. It's not, the emperor has come and may have disrespected a Brahmin by putting the snake around his neck. But that disturbance is very minor. It's just between the two of them. But if you kill the king, you know, especially the emperor, because the emperor then protects all the other kings and the whole world prospers by them being there. So when the emperor is removed, then all these problems come. Means then all the dacoits come up, everybody becomes disturbed, and there's no peace, there's no sacrifice, unqualified people come into position, and because the sacrifice is given up, all the demigods, and they stop, you know, giving all the facilities for the persons, the trees and everything stop doing their duties, everybody stops, because there's no one to inflict any punishment. Right? One may say, well, how does that work? But we see someone powerful like Prithu. Then when the earth was not giving what it was supposed to, he even punished the earth because he's representing the Lord. So in this way, it should not be underestimated the responsibility that is there. 30. Punishment cannot be inflicted justly by one who has no assistant, nor by a fool, nor by a covetous man, nor by one whose mind is unimproved, nor by one addicted to sensual pleasures. So this is the disqualification. One who has no assistant, because on one's own, one can't do a whole lot. means if you're taking big responsibility, there must be assistance. You're not taking any responsibility. You're taking care of yourself. Then that's okay. But if you have to do big things, then there must be help. Because you can't be at every place at every time. There must be people who are supporting. Therefore, the kings always have so many ministers, and they maintain a very big administration. That's why a king is called an administrator. Because that's what he's doing most of the time. Sometimes he goes out and he's a warrior. Right? If need be. In the name of punishment, you know, for protecting his people from other unscrupulous kings, or for subduing the dacoits, then that aspect will come out. But otherwise, then he must have assistance to take care of all these things. By a fool means he doesn't know what he's doing. Covetous man, who is always very desirous of so many things, therefore he will punish people that don't deserve to be punished, just to get what he wants. When his mind is unimproved, unless we've been trained in the scriptures and trained in self-control and all these things, then where's the improvement of the mind? The mind will be duplicitous. The mind wants so many things. Or by one addicted to sensual pleasures, we think of kings and we think of great opulence and great sensual pleasure, but actually all those things aren't for a sensual pleasure. Those are just to keep the senses in order, the senses functioning properly. Otherwise, that's what they're for. Otherwise, they won't function properly. Text 31. By him who is pure and faithful to his promise, who acts to the institutes of the sacred law, who has good assistance and is wise, punishment can be justly inflicted. So here, he has to be pure. In other words, he can't be addicted to sensual pleasure. He's faithful to his promise. If he says something's going to happen, that must happen. Because otherwise, if it doesn't happen, no one's going to trust. The king goes back on his word, who's going to trust? So what is spoken must happen. Acts according to the institutes of the sacred law means what he's going to do must be based on the proper rulings of how to deal with people, how to run the state. If that's not there, it cannot function properly. Who has good assistance, therefore he must find those who can give good advice and all. If he has bad advisors, he won't be able to do nicely. Means here we can look at who has no assistant, we can either mean he's alone or means he has bad assistance. Right? Like we see, Kaikei, she had that hunchback. And then because she was bad association, therefore she made the wrong decision. So what she did was unjust. And because of this, it ruined the whole kingdom. Everything went upside down. No one was satisfied. Not one person. Like that. Not even the hunchback. You know? So at the end, no one was satisfied because bad association. So good assistance means that they know what they're talking about. Like that. Then, who is wise, who has realization, so that only is gained by whose mind is improved, not unimproved. Means you have studied, you have heard, you have practiced, then you realize. So that realization gives the wiseness. Then, punishment can be justly given. 32. Let him act with justice in his own domain, with rigor chastise his enemies. Behave without duplicity towards his friends and be lenient towards brahmanas. Okay, so this means in his area where he has his influence, there he must, how you say? He must act with a justice. He must be very strict in his own domain. And then everybody will be satisfied. When there's strictness, everybody knows what's the standard and everyone's mind is peaceful. One may feel that the liberality is important for the people in general, but generally what you find is when the liberality is too much, the people don't know what to do and what not to do. So they do all kinds of things that actually make them mad. Right? One devotee, it was funny. His father told him, you know, before he was a devotee, you know, he was a hippie, and he says, what makes you happy makes you crazy. You know? So So the thing is that's the common thing, is people, if they don't know, they don't have any standards, they won't go according to the Shastra. Therefore, then they will, they're not, their mind is not peaceful, they're not satisfied. So therefore, in his own domain, he must always be performing his duties. Rigor chastises enemies. The enemies means those who are trying to disturb his public, or trying to undermine his influence over his subjects. So if he's properly taking care of his subjects, and they're feeling threatened by the next kingdom, who is creating problems because they want to take something. You know, let's say part of the kingdom is very opulent, and that part of the kingdom then is next to that other person's kingdom. So he wants to take that, so he has that opulence. So then by doing that, the rest of his kingdom will become poor. So the king can't let that happen. He has to protect his people, so that they have their opulence and everything. So he must be very rigorously chastise the enemies. Behave without duplicity towards his friends. So whatever his friends, he must be very open and straightforward. Like that. It must be the exchange must be very, how you say, yeah, it can be with. It cannot have any duplicity. It must be very, very proper. Huh? Genuine. Yeah, that's the word. Genuine. Because I didn't want to say substance, because in the material world there is no substance. But you know, that means. But it means. Yeah, it must be genuine. The dealings must be proper, and be lenient towards brahmanas, because the brahmanas, they act according to the scriptures. And that, and so he must give them their space to work. And sometimes if they do something wrong, then he must be able to see things according to the philosophy, what happens. Means even says this, you know, a sage may become bewildered if he fixes his mind on one sense object. They can get carried away. But if he sees that the person is properly situated, they actually have brahminical character, they're always acting according to that, but this time something went wrong, then they must be lenient. But if they, by study, see that this person doesn't have brahminical character, never had brahminical character, but is claiming to have, then one is not lenient with such a person. That is an imposter. But someone who is proper Brahman, then they must see, you know, if sometimes something goes wrong, they must give some space there. At the same time, as they know that by nature, a Brahman means, it's not just he's doing the activity as the nature of the Brahman. It means you're doing the activity because you have that nature, not that you're doing it because you want to make a show. So by nature, Brahman has to work according to the scriptures. Like we see Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is at one point is not acting properly. So his sons don't reject him. They just come up to him and say, "My dear sir, this is not very proper what you're doing." So then immediately he goes, "Yes, you're right." It reminds him of, yes, what is the proper action. And then he changes his whole mentality. So that's a Brahman. Brahman, when it's pointed out to them, especially the scriptural and all the different effects, they're we can see that they're generally capable of changing the difficulty. Like that. Or you must see that they're in such association that they can change. They're not dealt with like someone else, because they must act, by nature must act according to scripture. So sometimes due to bad habit or bad association, you know, or by, you know, just by inattentiveness, then they may not act properly. The fame of a king who behaves thus, even though he subsists by gleaning, is spread in the world like a drop of oil on water. So a king who acts like this, even if he has nothing, you know, then his fame will be spread all over. So even though he may be a small king, he will be famous because he has qualities of a king. You notice up to now, we've been talking about the qualities of a king. So this is what the Gita says. The king works according to qualities. The Brahmin works according to qualities. Like that. Business and artists are not acting necessarily according to qualities. They may have, especially as devotees, then they have all good qualities because they're a Brahmin. They're automatically a Brahmin. But otherwise, it's that The activity can be done if you're just expert at it. You're expert at business, you make money, whether you have good qualities or not. Right? You're expert in art, whether you have good qualities or not. It goes very nicely. You see, many times, good musicians, good actors, and people like this, they seem so wonderful there, but in their own private life, it may be very, you know, may not be of a very exemplary nature, like that. So, but they're expert at it. But the king and the Brahmin, they can only act if they have good qualities. So therefore, we see the good qualities are being described. That must be there. So now we also must understand there's a system how they're going to get that. They're only going to get these qualities by proper training. That means the proper training under the Brahmins. Right? And then they're advised by the Brahmins. They have good assistance. So that combination of the Brahmin and the Kshatriya then makes for a very proper, peaceful running and protection of society. So here, yeah. But the fame of a king who acts in a contrary manner and who does not subdue himself diminishes in extent amongst men like a drop of clarified butter in water. Why, that just sinks or something, or it just goes into a ball? It says here oil spreads on the water, but the oil, ghee, what, you put it, goes inside or something?
Maybe it's hot, and it just goes down and becomes hard?
I don't know. Yeah. Comes a lump. Oh, I see. Yeah. Because it'll be, yeah, and on water it gets cold, so it'll just stay like that. Huh? Oh, yeah. In Charinamrita you see the lumps of ghee. Okay. 35. The king has been created to be the protector of the varnas and orders, varnas and ashramas, who all, according to their rank, discharge the several duties. Whatever must be done by him and by his servants for the protection of his people, that I will fully declare to you in due order. So now, here he's talked about the character and the qualities of the king. So now he's going to tell what are the duties of the king himself, personally, what he must do, right? But, see, generally we want to hear about kings, so we immediately want to hear about what he is supposed to do, right? You know, what are the tricks of management, administration, everything. But here, Bhrigu thought it wise to spend 34 verses just talking about the qualities of a king. Like that. Before he even starts talking about what their duties are. So this is done by him and his servants for the protection of his people. So that's all these duties are for that reason. That must always be remembered. Okay, 37. Let the king, after rising early in the morning, worship Brahmanas who are well versed in the threefold sacred science and learned in polity, and follow their advice. So it mentions here rising early in the morning. So even a king's got to get up for Mangal Arati, like that. And then he must respect the Brahmins who are well versed in the knowledge and who can actually give advice, and he must take their advice. Right? Therefore, he must find those who are well versed in the threefold sacred science, which means they know the, what do you call it? Either the three Vedas, or you can say Shruti, Smriti, and the philosophy, the three prastans, right? You know them? Veda prastan, Nyaya prastan, Shruti prastan, and Smriti prastan. Means the Veda, then all the shastras coming from the Veda, and the Vedanta Sutra. So those, and besides that, then they know the how to run the kingdom. They know the law, the sacred law. They know the Artha Shastra, like Chanakya. He knows all that. Like that. 38. Let him daily worship aged Brahmanas who know the Veda and are pure. For he who always worships aged men is honored even by Rakshasas. You know, Rakshasas, they, like you'll see, many times. It's not uncommon. It's kind of like a cliche. Sometimes these very rough, you know, at least in the old kind of world, the melodramatic world of personalities, and the really rough, dacoits and stuff like that. Then, you know, they, you know, like mafia and this, they respect their mother, you know. They respect their mother. They respect other people who respect their mother. I mean, you don't respect their mother, just for that they'd kill you, even though they had nothing else to do with you. You know, you don't respect your mother. It's like that. So they always deal very proper, because they know that these things are proper. So even like the Rakshasas, if you respect properly other people, elder people and that, then even they'll appreciate, you know, they'll even respect such a person. Because they know it. It's proper. Everybody knows it's proper. Like that. So respect for the elder, that is proper. 39. Let him, though he may already be modest, constantly learn modesty from them. For a king who is modest never perishes. Now here, modesty must be there. That simplicity, modesty, humility, these things must be learned. A king has to have these qualities. Always remember, these are the qualities. We may think king and megalomaniac and dictator and all that. That is not a king. That's the first thing that should be understood. That is not a king. We may think they're kings. Maybe they were kings in the Maletya world, the barbarian world, or, you know, the subhuman world. But they're not kings. Kings means qualities. So here, the king must be modest. These cliches that we have about megalomaniacs, if we have that, then we shouldn't, one, we shouldn't listen to the subject, two, we shouldn't deal with you know, people in position of management. We should neither advise them, nor should we criticize them. And if we feel obliged to criticize, because we have this concept, anybody who has any power will misuse it, this, that, then best thing for us, for ourselves and for others, is to just go to the forest. You know? Then we will not be disturbed, we will not disturb others. King means quality. Therefore, you want to put someone in a position of leadership, you must first look for the qualities. And if you don't find qualities, then you must put a system in place to create those good qualities. Right? This is what Chanakya did. Chanakya looks around, he doesn't see any proper kings, so he looks around to find someone who has the potential to be a king. Then he trains him in the qualities, then he puts him in the position. Right? If you're a Brahmin, you know how to train a king. Right? At least if you're trained in this way. If you're not, then you'll look for Brahmins who do know, and you'll let them do it. Right? If you're a Kshatriya, then you become a Kshatriya because you have learned in the proper way. So however you learn, you should see that, find others and see that it expands. Right? Like this, we should do. You know? But if we can only find fault and we ourselves don't have qualities to do it, we may be able to manage, but we don't have qualities. That's not good enough. Right? It's not good enough. Or just because we have an opinion is not good enough. Everybody's got opinions, right? Right? There are a dime a dozen. So that's not the important thing. Just because we have an opinion doesn't mean that it's worth listening to. Unless that opinion is based on the scripture, based on the practical application of that scripture. You know, from what we've heard through authority, that opinion has zero value. Right? From our own perspective. Someone else's perspective, they may see, oh, well, you can take gold even from a dirty place. And because you know the scripture, you can say what the person is saying is according to scripture, even though they don't know it. Right? So if we ourselves don't know the scripture, and we ourselves don't have good qualities, if we are worried about these things, then we should find those people with good qualities who know the scripture and encourage them to establish the proper thing through the proper methods, not according to how we want it. Right? It's not according to Vox Populi, it's according to Krishna's system. So here, back to this, the king must be modest. right? And even though it says he may already be modest, still he should cultivate more of this modesty by associating with those senior to him, especially the senior brahmanas. He must always be humble before those persons, right? Now it's very important to note, in this whole relationship, a brahman means the person who does not want to do the management himself, and who does not claim to be the doer, right? And who is not very worried that he himself is going to be respected for being a great advisor. It is his duty to advise. He gives advice. It is up to the king whether he takes it or not. And if he does take it, then the people give the respect to the king, and the Brahmin will also glorify the king. One may say, well, that was my idea, but the point is it may be of our idea, but the king took it and did it. And the Brahmin has the idea, but he is not able to do it, or is not inclined to do it. Right? By nature, he's not inclined. Just like we see with Vishwamitra. So Vishwamitra, in this time in the story, is already now doing the activities of a brahmana. So he's a little bit worried about just doing the duties of a brahmana. So now he comes to Maharaj Dasarath and asks him for his son, because his son is Lord Ramachandra, and he's doing a sacrifice, and this sacrifice then is being disturbed by the demons. So Vishwamitra, having been a king before, he knows the art of fighting and astras and all this and that, but he doesn't do it himself, right? He says, I'm a Brahmin, so therefore let Ramachandra come. He's a Kshatriya. He should get rid of the demons, right? He can do it himself, but that's not a Brahmin's business. So the Brahmana gives that advice, and the king then takes it and follows it, and the king gets the glory. Publicly, it's the king who is glorified. Then privately, we see that the king respects those Brahmins. And he knows that the reason it went nicely was because of the good counsel of the Brahmins. So it's a very nice relationship, very deep relationship between Brahmins and Kshatriyas. Like that. They get along very, very well. That's if you have proper Brahmins and proper Kshatriyas. Because the Brahmin doesn't want it to be known, yes, it was my idea. He wants everybody to know it was the king's idea, because the point is then they'll follow the king. If they think, the king doesn't know, then the Brahmin does, then they'll want the Brahmin to lead. And then how will the Brahmin lead? He leads by his good example and good counsel. And that inspires everybody. So the king always talks about respecting the Brahmins and all this and that. And he may even say, yes, everything's going nicely because these Brahmins gave this good advice. But still, everybody knows they respect the Brahmins, but also respect that king, because he has taken the... It takes good qualities to accept the advice of the Brahmanas, not to think, yes, I'm so smart, I know everything. Right? So both must have this modesty. The Brahmins and the Kshatriyas must have modesty. 40. Through a want of modesty, many kings have perished, together with their belongings. Through modesty, even hermits in the forest have gained kingdoms. Right? So if one is properly behaved, then all good fortune is there. Modesty is the thing. If we're really worried about economic development, then we should start off with modesty. Because from modesty, then we can actually respect elders. We can be friends with equals, we can be kind to juniors, we can do all those things. Then from this, then will come everything else. Everything else will follow. If we're modest, the senses will be controlled. If we're modest, all these different aspects will come. So modesty is very, very important. So the modern concept where modesty is not not very well valued, then we see that everything becomes very poor. Like that. Things become very difficult. 41. Through a want of humility, Vena perished. Likewise, King Nahusha, Sudas, the son of Pingavan, Sumuka, and Nimi. Right? So these things happened plenty of time before. So here we, Bhrigu is talking, referring to them. So they didn't have that. Now, Vena, you know, he just thought he was God. So he didn't, there was no modesty. Nahusha wanted to enjoy boy Indrani because he was sitting in the position of Indra, because Indra, I think, was hiding in a lotus stem or something, you know, because he was not being very modest at the time. So then they brought in Nahusha, who then, being there for a while, doing a good job and getting all this respect, then he decided, well, if I'm sitting in the place of Indra, I should also have the facility of enjoying Indrani. So then, you know, then no one knew what to say, because he's acting as the king, but at the same time as, you know, Indrani's not his wife. So then they don't know what to do. And then, you know, after some discussion, then then the seven sages, then they come up with a plan and then tell him to tell her to say she will only spend time with him if he comes in a palanquin carried by the seven rishis. So then amongst the seven rishis you have Agastya, who's only the size of a thumb. So you can imagine that if you put the other rishis on three of the, arms of the palanquin, and then you have Agastya alone on one of them, the thing will be tilted very severely, you know? Plus, because he's so small, he only takes very small steps, so you can only basically move an inch at a time. So now, he is very desirous of spending time with Indrani, so then his patience is not very great. So when he's very uncomfortably situated in this palanquin, you know, that's half falling over, and then it's moving at one inch at a time, then he becomes, you know, very disturbed. And then he leans out of the palanquin. He's probably already half leaning out anyway. But, you know, he makes it a point to lean out in Agastya's that's probably the direction he's falling out. Out in that direction and tells him, go quicker. But he uses the term sarpa sarpa, which means quickly. But it also means snake. So he says, sarpa sarpa. And Agastya says, yes, sarpa sarpa. And then he turned into a big snake, Nahusha. So because of lack of modesty, he was in the seat of Indra, but he didn't understand that he is serving. It is what he can do to help the universe. And that is his service, and taking advice from the brahmanas and being respectful to all other personalities, then this is what he should do. This is the proper etiquette. But he was not following that. By humility, Prithu and Manu gained sovereignty, Kuvera the position of the lord of wealth, and the son of Gaudi the rank of a brahmana. Who's Gaudi? The son of Gaudi? 43. From those versed in the three Vedas, let him learn the threefold sacred science. It also meant threefold science, meaning the philosophy. In the notes. From those versed in the three Vedas, let him learn the threefold sacred science. The primeval science of government, mentions here primeval, means it's been there since time immemorial. It's worked since the beginning of creation, it worked in the last creation, it worked in the creation before that. And it's also working simultaneously at present in all the other unlimited universes that Krishna has manifested, and in all the unlimited universes and times that they manifest in time past. So that primeval science is always worked. So it's not that something that's been working even in this in in present history for the last 151 trillion years won't work today in the modern world, right? Can we say that, no, I'm sorry, it won't work? It means if we had a person who had good qualities leading the country, nothing would go properly. Would anyone agree with that? Would any intelligent, sane, you know, person agree with that? No. So that's what it said. Leader must act according to these principles. He must be humble, respect others. I mean, if you said these things, you know, publicly, you know, translate them to language they understand, would anyone disagree? No. So then, this is the point. Okay, the primeval science of government he should learn, also the sciences of dialectics, and the knowledge of the Supreme Soul. From the people, the theory of the various trades and professions. So those from the Brahmanas, he must learn the philosophy, the Veda itself, the various aspects of the Veda. He must learn how the government works. In other words, it's still based on the Shastra. Then all the science of, how you say? Yeah. All the different aspects of Sanskrit and all these different things. And the philosophy, the Paravidya, the transcendental science of the relationship of the soul with God. That's what he must learn from the qualified Brahmanas. Then from the people in general, the theory of the various trades and professions. He doesn't necessarily have to practice it himself, but he has to know the theory of it. Theology he's learned in the Shastras. So the theory you learn from those who do it. Right? So how business works, you learn from someone who knows business. The different arts and all that, you learn from those people. Right? You learn that from a Shudra, you learn that from whoever knows it. Like the person who comes and teaches wrestling to the king, generally is a Shudra. He's a wrestler. Right? Or a musician. Musician teaches music to the king. He's a Shudra. Like that. So he learns the arts from the people. Like that. He can learn from anyone who knows it, he's learning from. Because he's modest. He's humble. So it's not he's the big king, he can't learn from anybody. No, he'll learn. Whoever knows it good, whoever knows it the best, he'll learn from them. Right? In the kingdom, who knows music the best, he'll learn from him. Like that. Who knows business the best, he'll learn from them. Who knows any other arts or science that is useful for him, he'll learn from them. Then he knows the best. He's learned from the best. And people respect that. Right? No one disrespects that, oh, he's learning from a Shudra music. No, who else knows it better? If there's a Brahmin who knows, good, he'll learn from him. But if not, he'll learn from the people. Right? So people then see, yes, he's willing to take knowledge from wherever it's useful. Like that. 44. Day and night, he must strenuously exert himself to conquer his senses. For he alone, who has conquered his own senses, can keep his subjects in obedience. This is very important. Day and night. It says day and night. It says night also. You know, we think of kings and big harems, and it says day and night. You must be keeping the senses in control. This is the business of the king. Sometimes devotees think, oh, we're at administrative positions, so, you know, we can kind of let it go a little bit. But it already mentions that the leader should get up from Mangal Aratik and they should control their senses. And they should be humble. Right? You know, when you get into talking like this, this is a leader, then sometimes many people may think, well, maybe this isn't so great after all. Right? For all that respect one gets and all the influence that one has, but still these qualities must be there. So strenuously he must do, exert himself to conquer his senses. Not to keep them in control, but to conquer them. If they're not conquered, how is he going to punish people without being unjust? He won't have his own biased opinion or improperly do things. You know, he must see what is right and what is wrong. So he must have controlled senses. He can't be avaricious. He has to have controlled senses. So, who has conquered his senses can keep his subjects in obedience. You can't keep your senses, how are you going to keep the world? The senses aren't controlled, then the queen is not going to respect. The people in the palace are not going to respect. So why will the rest of the subjects respect? Right? So the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas, they have that respect because of their controlled senses. And it mentions that any of the Varnas and Ashrams, if they're intelligent, but they're interested in going back to Godhead, then they must also follow these principles of respect. Right? Like that. Because all these things that are here, this must be displayed to a great degree and in a social environment, an administrative environment for the king. But these same things have to be applied in the house. The husband's going to lead the house, he must have controlled senses. He must be humble. He must respect the seniors in the family. He must take advice from people who are properly trained. You know, the Brahmins and other leaders of the community. You know, he must see that everything is properly going on in the family. Everything is justly happening. So in a small way, these things apply. It means any leader must be able to do this. But the king has it in the greatest amount. As we mentioned before, means all the dealings and all that, depending upon who has it in the greatest degree, it's explained there in the Vedic literatures. But it applies for anyone else in a similar position. Therefore, if you want to discuss about kings, you're actually discussing about anyone who's leading. And that includes even in the family. Husband and wife, husband with the wife, the mother and father with the children, teachers with students, right, the demigods, like that. All this, it all goes together. So to some degree, these qualities must be manifest. But the king is where we see the greatest amount manifesting, like that, because he must do for the whole kingdom, you know. And if he's a great king, then for the whole world. Let him carefully shun the 10 vices, springing from love of pleasure, and the 8 proceeding from wrath, which all end in misery. Okay, yeah, so we'll get around to that. So there's 10 vices that coming from love of pleasure and 8 proceeding from wrath. Means, in other words, they all, how you say? Which all means all these 18 end in misery. In other words, those would come from pleasure, then you get some problems that come there. Then when you don't get your pleasure, you get upset, you get angry, then another 8 come. So all these come and then they will... like that. So it says carefully shun. So it says springing from the love of pleasure. Generally we think of kings and great pleasure and all this. But they're actually, all the facilities that they get as a king aren't for their pleasure. Means they may find it nice, but they don't, how you say? They are not bewildered. They're not bewildered by these things because they're not for themselves. Okay, for a king who is attached to the vices springing from love of pleasure. He loses his wealth and his virtue. But he is given to those... loses his wealth and virtue. But he who is given to those arising from anger loses even his life. So the vices that come up from love of pleasure, then you may lose your wealth and your virtue, good qualities. But for those that are springing from anger, the 8 bad qualities from anger, then you may even lose your life. So here is the 10 from springing from pleasure. 47. Hunting, gambling, sleeping by day, censoriousness, excess with women, drunkenness, an inordinate love for dancing, singing, and music, and useless travel are the tenfold set of vices springing from love of pleasure. Useless travel. Hunting, gambling, sleeping by day, censoriousness, I guess that's to do with the senses. Excess with women, drunkenness, and inordinate love for dancing, singing, and music, and useless traveler, the tenfold set of advices springing from love of pleasure. Right? So unless these things can be engaged in the Lord's service, then, right, so it becomes a little difficult, some of these things. Except for the singing, dancing, and music. If it's kirtan, then there's not so much problem. Then, from anger, tale-bearing, violence, treachery, envy, slandering, unjust seizure of property, reviling, and assault are the eightfold set of vices produced by wrath. Hmm. 49. That greediness which all wise men declare to be the root even of both of these sets, let him carefully conquer. Both sets of vices are produced by that. Okay, so greediness and greed is what gives rise to all this coming. That's why greed must be very much given up. So the only useful application of greed must be changed from trying to gain so much material facility and enjoyment, and must be put into greed for wanting to hear about the Lord's qualities, you know, speak about them, chant the holy name, you know, render service to the Lord. Like that. That way then we can be very greedy, you know, always never satisfied, 24 hours a day hearing and chanting about the Lord and rendering service and still not satisfied. That's the proper application of greed. Otherwise, then it gives rise to all these bad things. 50. Drinking, dice, women, and hunting. These four which have been enumerated in succession. He must know to be the most pernicious in the set that springs from love of pleasure. Right. Drinking, dice, women, and hunting. So of the ten, these six are the worst. Yeah, in this order. He must know to be the worst. Then 51, doing bodily injury, reviling, and the seizure of property. These three he must know to be the worst in the set produced by wrath. Yeah. 52, a self-controlled king should know that in this set of seven, which prevails everywhere, each earlier named vice is more abominable than those named later. Okay. So everyone should know that in this set of seven, which prevails everywhere, each earlier named vice is more abominable than those named later. So that means he mentioned... Okay. So then that leaves sleeping by the day, censoriousness, then inordinate love for dancing, singing, and music, and then useless travel. Like that. So those are, you know, he's saying this is quite common. So these should also be very carefully guarded against. Sleeping by day. So even the king can't sleep by the day. It's not just the brahmachari and the brahmin. 43. On a comparison between vice and death, vice is declared to be worse. A vicious man sinks to the nethermost hell. He who dies, free from vice, ascends to heaven. Okay, so this ends that kind of section there. Are there any questions in all this? Or? Yes. Speak louder.
A king is expected to enjoy his kingdom, because that will, otherwise the subjects are inspired to see him happy or enjoying the kingdom. So he's supposed to enjoy it as a duty, and part of the duty he has to.
Yeah, but that enjoyment is not out of the realm of scriptures. Yeah. Right? He may enjoy the kingdom. He has a nice bed, doesn't mean he sleeps in it in the daytime, unless he's sick. Right? He has nice food, but it means they're cooking the nice things for him, so he's accepting that, but it doesn't mean he overeats. Right? He has a nice palace and this and that, but he doesn't get into just using it for his own enjoyment as such. He takes pleasure in being in the palace. He must be satisfied. He can only be satisfied. Doing his duties means that, you know, the people surrounding him are properly doing their duties, properly trained, properly religious, and the subjects are properly doing everything nicely. So if he's enjoying his facility, means that everything's going nicely in the kingdom. So if he's enjoying, that's a very good sign. So that happiness is not coming from just facilities that he has. Happiness basically is coming from, one, his own God consciousness, and two, that everything is being run nicely for God's pleasure. Then he is satisfied. Like that. So enjoyment doesn't, he just takes it for himself. One has to be very careful, because so many points have been made that he must control the senses. And he must not overindulge in anything. Right? It didn't say that he doesn't have a wife. If he spends too much time with her, that's not good. Right? I don't remember, it's one of the famous, yeah. So, like that, it must be, one must be careful. Right? Too much time, then he has to also give time to the running of the kingdom. But if he sits with the queen all day, then what's the use? Like that. So that leads to problem. Right? He may lose his wealth or his position. Because if he's always with the queen and never managing the kingdom, another king will come along and steal everything. Right? So everything must be balanced properly. Right? Anything else? Yes.
You were talking about Vishvamitra, how he knew the martial arts, or the martial principles, but he wouldn't use them. What about the case of Drona?
Yes, when he—that's why then he could be attacked by. They're back. That's why he could be killed in the battlefield if he just sat in his tent and gave advice to Duryodhana. And that, then there's no question that he could be killed. But because he came on the battlefield, that's only for Kshatriyas. Right? Kshatriyas and those who assist the Kshatriyas. So whoever comes out there can be killed. So he took the position of a general, which is not done by a Brahmin. So he was guna and karma. Therefore he was acting as a Kshatriya. He wasn't acting as a Brahmin. Therefore he could be killed. He was an advisor, yeah. Means his knowledge, his field of knowledge is that of the military science. So he would teach, he himself would teach that to others. Because a Brahmin has an area of knowledge that he's very expert at. And that is what he teaches to others. You know? So it means specifically the philosophy, and then any other branch that is according to one's conditioned nature, then one has some, you know, affinity for. And then that, by a study of that and understanding of that and teaching others in it, then that's how one becomes purified. That's how one performs one's duty. So his teaching the Pandavas, like before, he knew the military science, right? So he could have defeated Drona, I mean Drupad, very easily. I mean, if the Pandavas are doing it, and he is their teacher, right? And there's things he hasn't also taught the Pandavas, right? There's certain things even that they hadn't learned. I think there was one technique of wearing the armor that only Abhimanyu knew. The others didn't know it. You know? It was a way of, because none of them were conscious enough. But because Abhimanyu is a Gandharva, he had that consciousness of his body. They wear the armor very loosely. Normally they strap it on very tight, and so there's no gap between the armor. So just to harass the other person, they'll shoot arrows. So it just goes in between the armor and pricks the skin, you know, just to give trouble. You know, you shoot an arrow and just get it to wedge itself between the various plates of armor. But Abhimanyu knew the science. You wear it very loosely, and then you're so conscious of the weapons coming, you move your body so that you close that gap so nothing can get in between. So there were things that he knew that hadn't even taught them, right? Or he'd only taught some of them. He taught Arjuna, right? Like on the battlefield, that hall, all those great personalities there, no one knew, what was it? The chakra of Vyuha?
Yeah.
Only Arjuna knew it. Right? Arjuna and Abhimanyu. Abhimanyu only knew how to get in because his mother fell asleep when he was talking, you know, when he was talking about how to get out. Right? Then, what did I say? So he could have easily gone and defeated Drupad. But he didn't. He did his dharma as a brahmana. He went and got patronage of the court of the kings and said, I will train your students. And then as soon as they were trained, he says, okay, now I want my dakshin. And what was the dakshin? They had to go and capture Drupad and bring him to him. And so then, at being brought to him, he's naturally in a humbled position. So then Drona then takes half the kingdom. Because the whole point was is they couldn't be friends if they were not equals. And he's a poor beggar Brahmin, and he's a big, big king. So where's the equality? Rather than they were friends and classmates in the Gurukul. So therefore they were equals. But he was looking at it in a very mundane way. So that angered Drona. So then Drona went, he did through his brahminical activities, then he got half the kingdom. Then he said, now we're equals. Right? But being a king, it was not overly forgiving in this way. Too much passion was there. The same passion that made him make that mistake, then the same passion. He made this mistake. Like that. Does that make any sense?
So when Drona was fighting on the battlefield, he was deviating from his...
Yeah, he was deviating from his duty. He shouldn't have been doing, he should have only been advising. You know? Because he goes out, it's just like a Brahmin is doing business, then you can be dealt in the community, in the business field, as a businessman. Maybe outside of occupational time, then people know he's a Brahmin, and due to, you know, a very difficult situation, he's having to do business. But in the field of business, he's not given any special attention, special consideration because he's a Brahmin. Business is business. You know, that's all. He does something wrong in the business, and other people will take advantage. You understand? Like that. So it means when they're back at the tents and everything, then they may respect him as they respect him as his teacher. You know, in the social dealings. But on the battlefield, then they're Kshatriyas. That's all. Right? And there, it's whoever challenges, and that's who fights. And when they're back at the tent, then they'll get into all the etiquette, who's older, and, you know, who's, you know, senior in so many ways, and who has a bigger kingdom, and bigger army, and more wealth, all these different things, what they may consider amongst themselves. But on the battlefield, it's just who challenges, then they fight. Who wins is the winner. It's very, very simple. You understand, it's important to understand this difference also. Right? It's important to understand this is that the aspect is that when you're dealing in the field, and then those who have that character, that nature, then there's some equality is there. But it must always be done according to good management and the dealings in the Brahmins, the Brahmin Kshatriyas. It always must be according to the Shastra. Therefore, there'll always be good qualities manifest. You know, we may say, well, okay, the senior devotees and junior devotees in a management meeting, and so basically everybody should be treated equal. That is true. But at the same time, is everybody has proper qualities, so they're also humble and properly behaved. Right? So those who are senior can take advice from those who are junior. They may have some great ideas. Those who are junior are humble and take and respect those who are senior. But the discussion of management is very open and free. Right? A junior one is not speaking just because a senior one is there. Right? But the etiquette is still being followed. Does that make some sense? Therefore, when Arjuna, was going to start the fighting, then he shot two arrows, one at each foot. He didn't hit the feet, just in front of the feet of Drona. Like that. That's his offering, his respect. You know, this means the, what do you call it? Among Kshatriyas, these are rated very high on the list. Like that. And then for Yudhishthira, then he got up and... means there was just time to start. Everybody's ready. I mean, they're ready to start the fight. And then, just before the fight, then Yudhishthira takes off his armor, takes off his crown, puts down his weapons, takes off his shoes, like that, and then walks barefoot across the gap in between, and then walks over to, I think, Drona and Bhishma, yeah. So then at that time, then Duryodhana and Shakuni and all these kind of persons, they think, Yudhishthira has seen the might of our army and he's coming over for negotiations. He's become scared, he doesn't want to fight. But he walks right over, but Drona and Bhishma know, no, this is not what's going on. He walks over, offers obeisance, circumambulates them, and then they're so pleased, you know, that before starting the battle, he's come and offered his respects to his teachers and well-wishers. And then from that, then they naturally want to give blessings. So he says, whatever, you ask for any blessing, whatever you want. And then they say, he says, they offered a number of blessings? Ask that you may bless me that I may win the battle. And they say, yes, you have my blessings. And then he says, well, to win the battle, that means you can't win the battle unless, you know, him, Bhishma, and Drona are removed from the battlefield. So how will that be done? So then they each tell how they will be killed. You know? They say, this is the only way you can kill. No one can, like Bhishma, no one can kill me. You know, Drona also. There's no one on the battlefield who could kill Drona. What he knows and all that. But he says, but if this is there, then I won't fight. If my son dies, I won't fight. You know? He says, at that time only, then I can be killed. And Bhishma, what does he say? Yeah, he says, he won't fight against Shikhandi. Huh?
The woman in front of me, I want you.
Yeah, so like that. Huh? He says both of those?
Yeah.
He says someone who's a woman, who's been a woman. Now one thing on this, what was the name?
Shikhandi.
Did he take birth again, or just by meditation and that blessings he just changed?
She can't birth by the fire.
Yeah.
As a woman. then she changed her sex during her life.
No, but then she took birth again as a woman.
Yeah. And then she would change into a man.
She changed her sex.
But that's, okay, well, that's the thing, is the changing happened in the same body.
Yeah.
Okay.
But like, he was like a Mahara. He was a great, great fighter than Duryodhana fighter.
Really?
So he's like...
Sikandi.
Hindi Mahabharata is like...
Oh, where they show him roll up and he looks like a...
Okay,
yeah, like that. It's not exactly... Okay.
Also, like in Mahabharata, there's five people who have the strength of 10,000 elephants.
Huh.
So there's Bhima. Then Krishna's being offended and they just see a sacrifice. Shishupal.
Huh.
Then Bhima wanted to stand up and kill him. And he wanted to stand up. Bhishma was sitting next to him and discussed with him how his techniques were fighting. And Bhishma just reached over the arm of the chair and put his hand on Bhima's knee.
That's controller key, right? Yeah. But Shikandi was one of them?
No.
Uh-huh. Oh, so that's why in the beginning it says Sikandi and others like this are great. Okay, I never connected Sikandi that with the Sikandi in the Gita, because from seeing that Mahabharata thing, you know, you see Sikandi is a total fairy. You know? So then I was thinking, how is it he would be saying, yes, we have out here. Hmm.
That punishment with consideration.
Oh, yeah, so my point was before is that just out of his proper respect and everything like that, therefore he was successful. And Duryodhana, because he wasn't modest, everything was lost. So they're following their qualities very, very nicely. You know? They're following. You, go ahead.
Okay. He said punishment with consideration makes everyone happy. So yeah. That includes also the person who's being punished.
Yes, why not? And if he's not happy, what can you do? You know, it means he's not considering properly. No, if they properly understand, then they know that they're being benefited, because then the reaction to their improper activity, they will not experience. It's all removed. Like that. That's removed. Yes.
Can we speak in the case of Drona Acharya? That is a dharma dosha.
Dharma dosha. Yes. We would call this a dharma dosha. Like that. Not very... When you go to a restaurant and you see on the menu and it says dharma dosha, don't order it. Cheese dosa, masala dosa, plain dosa. You know, you have, you know, paper dosa. Or... Yeah, but not dharma dosha.
Any equal cases or like this in the shastras?
Equal cases?
Yeah, some other cases like this, like Drona, he was changing from Brahmin to Kshatriya, or some other cases where it's changing from Vaishya to Kshatriya or Kshatriya to Brahmin.
Oh yeah, you have a good one, Shudra to King. Called Kali Raj. Like that. You have Varna Shankara. So that means that they're not following their Varna. So therefore it comes into that category. You also have Ashram Shankara, not following the Ashram. Like that. You have both. You have both of them.
When no proper king or no proper brahmana is there, is it then possible that the king takes the duty of a brahmana, or the brahmana takes the duties of a king?
No, they perform their own duty how they're supposed to do it.
They will never take another vana, take up another.
Generally, not. Sometimes they may, means like you have, what's his name? Yamunacharya. He took up the duties of a king for some time. You know, because that came with his defeating defeating the court pundit, then he received half of the kingdom. So he decided to manage it. He should have not. He should have just given it back to the king. But he took it, managed it, and so then it had to be arranged by his guru. But not his guru is Natha Muni? Who? No, but his guru was Natha Muni, no? Oh, I see. So then, like that, he had to be put back on his track of performing the brahminical duties.
And by Parasharamuni? Parasharam?
Yeah, they could come out and fight with him if they dared. He's out there fighting, so they can come out and fight. The only problem is he, when he's in good form, moves at the speed of mind. And when he's feeling tired, he moves at the speed of wind. So unfortunately, no one would stand a chance. But they could come out and fight with him. There was no sin in that. Like that. But, you know, I don't think anybody, I don't think there was any expert technique seen in that scenario. Bhishma defeated Parasara. Those two, I mean, those were the two?
Yeah.
But what about Jamadagni?
Somebody, I don't know, if Purana said that the father changed it, someone that Purana said the servant of the father was so graceful to the Brahmin that he wanted to make him. He didn't tell him that this is what he was trying to do for him, that this time he can't be in the place. Isn't there something like the matter in the Brahmin?
Yeah, grand service. Somebody with a material motive switched the kids. So that means Parasaram was actually the son of the emperor, but he was brought up by Jamadagni. Oh, that's interesting. And then Jamadagni's kid was Vishwamitra, was brought up as the king's son. Oh, I see. So then it's not strange that Vishwamitra had this desire to become a brahmana, but he did it through kshatriya means. That's interesting. Okay. So we'll end here. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivrinda ki, Jainati Kaur, Premanandi.